the Water of the Word, the radio ministry of Pastor Steve Hadley at Harvest Family Fellowship in Reno. May the Lord inspire, encourage, and direct you today. May you be transformed and refreshed by the Water of the Word.
Prophecy update, election 2016. Let me show you a prophecy that maybe it is not as mainstream as some of the big ones. I got to set the backdrop here a little bit. In the book of Acts, chapter 14, Paul rolls into a town called Lystra. And he raises a guy who was diseased in his feet and he was lame. It was a bona fide miracle. And the people of Lystra were so, whoa, they were rushing animals to sacrifice to Paul and Barnabas. One of them is Zeus and the other one is Hermes. And Paul's all, no, you don't understand. We didn't do this great healing. Jehovah God did this through us. And they all went, oh, well then let's kill him. So they stoned Paul to death. Luke, who tells us this account in the book of Acts, he's a doctor and he knows dead when he sees dead. And the people who stoned him so thoroughly, they also thought he was dead. And they drug his motionless body outside the city gates. And they begin to pray. You know the story. Paul sits up, brushes himself off. And as I like to joke, and then he wrote a strongly worded letter to his missionary board. Why did you send me? No. You know what he does? He gets back up and he goes right back into Lystra. Well, later on, Paul will write. He says, you know, I know a guy. He's talking about himself. I know a guy. I can't say exactly how it happened. Was it in the body? Was it in the spirit? I don't know. But the Lord took me to heaven. And he showed me all kinds of stuff. But from that perspective, Paul's writing really takes on, now you're going to have to hang with me here a little bit, a multidimensional understanding. Hold your finger here, chapter 3 in Ephesians, and look at verse 18, or verse 17. That Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, and that you, being rooted and grounded in love, may be able to comprehend with all the saints what is the width and the length and the depth and the... Wait a minute, Paul. Didn't you study? There's only three dimensions, sir. There's height, width, and depth. There are more dimensions than what we understand. Example, a plane is only width and length. And if you draw a stick man who lives on this plane and he runs around, he doesn't have a third dimension, he only has two. And he's very happy in his two-dimensional system, and we say, hey, stick man, there's more than two dimensions. And the stick man says, I was born and raised in this two-dimensional system. There ain't no more than that. Well, let me show you a three-dimensional character. So here comes my three-dimensional character, and he stands on the person's plane. And the plane person bumps into a point and bumps into a point. Oh, I see. Three-dimensional being is only two points. Now he sits, and he can make out more. And then perhaps he even lays down, and he makes out the outline. You see, more information is needed so that the two-dimensional person can understand a three-dimensional person. And the two-dimensional planar people, they're really prideful. They pretty much believe, there's only two dimensions, length and width. No, dude, there's three. So you have to introduce a third-dimensional character, as I said. And the more that the three-dimensional character moves in and out and among the two-dimensional person's universe, they begin to understand, perhaps. Now, we live in a three-dimensional system. Everybody knows that. Until Einstein, he got to noticing that Newtonian physics didn't explain everything. And light was a real head-scratcher. Is it particles or is it waves? Well, it turns out it's both. Well, how could it be? emptiness in the vacuum of space. How could waves be transmitted when there is no medium with which an energy impulse must travel? And Einstein blew everybody's minds. He said, you know why? Because there's four dimensions. And all the three-dimensional people go, no way. You're drinking your bath water. You are nuts, Einstein. So he got his slide rule out, and he finally came up with E, energy, is equal to mass times the acceleration of the constant of the speed of light. In other words, if I take a paper clip and I turn all of its apparent solidness and turn it into energy, it would be more powerful than a 100-megaton explosion. How do I know that? Because they were able to make most of a gram of plutonium or uranium-238 and convert that to energy. And what did that do? The point of it is, Einstein was right. There are four dimensions. So, okay, there's height, width, depth, and space-time. Is that what Paul is referring to? Don't know. But it's interesting he mentions four dimensions. And why is that important? Because it turns out that time is a function of the creation. Time itself, God is outside of. Where God lives, it's not like he has a lot of time. Where God lives, there is no time. When we live here in our discernible, understandable, sort of graspable four dimensions, time to us is linear, past, present, and then future. Where God lives, he's outside of that four dimensions. He can visit and see any point of the linear four-dimensional time space. Are you with me? Okay. Does anybody need a Gatorade? Are you okay? Well, in the mid-1960s, a fellow by the name of Peter Higgs, out of the University of Edinburgh, he postulated, you know what? I think there's more than four dimensions. And everybody went, poof. And he talked about a little particle. He called it a boson, Higgs boson. Somebody called it the God particle. How many of you remember that? Now, to have a God particle, you need at least five and probably more dimensions. And then it was the Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland that we finally had the apparatus to generate such high energy particles, protons moving in one direction, protons moving in the other, both approaching the speed of light, and collide them into each other, and then watch what falls out. And they finally were able to see a Higgs boson. They actually didn't see it, but they saw something that it did. Point being is, hey, all you four-dimensional snobs, you know what? There's not four dimensions. There's at least five. And now they're telling us there could be upwards of 10 or more. Is this a church or physics class, Steve? I want you guys to know that the creation shows forth his handiwork. Here's what I'm saying. God has the ability to step outside of linear time as we know. And where he lives, he can look down time and see the future as easily as you would move your eyes from this position to that position. Now, with that in mind, with your physics degree clutched firmly in hand, let's go to verse 4 again. Just as he, Jesus, chose us in him, and here's the head scratcher, before the foundation of the world. What do you mean, Jesus? Jesus will say to the apostles, disciples at the time, he says, you know, guys, you didn't choose me. I chose you. And they're all, well, I'm pretty sure I chose you, Jesus. Yeah, because when you're on the timeline, it sure appears that way. Look when they were actually chosen, and look when you were chosen. Before the foundation of the world. Wait a minute. Are you saying that Jesus knew that I was going to choose him? What's the answer? He can see down the road. Yep, there you are. God looked down the timeline that would one day be, and he saw me asking him into his life. Verse 4, one more time. Just as he chose us in him, when, everybody? Before the foundation of the world. That we should be holy and without blame before him in love, comma. And having predestined us. There's a tough word for theologians. I personally believe it's making more and more sense with the scientific community catching up that we do not live in a four-dimensional system only. We live in a multi-dimensional system. And the only way we can know a multi-dimensional God is when he intersects our four-dimensional world. Zipped up a human suit and was born. And the three and four-dimensional snobs say, so you're outside of time, huh? Well, how do you know that? Well, I keep telling you, history written in advance. Oh, yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, that's good. We like that. And then he died, he rose again, and ascended into heaven. He now lives in heaven in that multidimensional system where he lives. Hard for humans to explain, but Paul saw it. Is that why he says four dimensions in Ephesians 4? Can't say. By the way, that's also why Jesus can show up in the Old Testament. We've seen a couple of those on our Wednesday night study. Verse 5, having predestined those he calls, says the book of Romans chapter 8 verse 30, whom he calls, he predestined, what? To adoption as sons by Jesus Christ, to the praise of the glory of his grace by which he made us accepted in the beloved, that is in Jesus. Verse 7, and in him we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of sins, according to the riches of his grace. Now verse 8, now watch this. Here's our prophecy today. And believe me, it's going to have a bearing on these elections in the year 2016. Verse 8, which he, Jesus, made to abound towards us in all wisdom and all prudence, having made known to us the mystery of his will, wonderful word in Greek, mysterion. It doesn't mean you'll never get it. That's not what it's saying. It's mysterion, a previously hidden truth, is now unveiled, which he purposed in himself. That in the, say this word with me, dispensation, oikonomios. And it means literally an arrangement or an administration. That in the dispensation of the fullness of times, he might gather together in one all things in Christ, both which are in heaven and which are in earth in him. Let me maybe reword that for you. God has now revealed to us his plan regarding Jesus. And this is the plan. At the completion of all the dispensations, he will bring everything together under the authority of Jesus. Everything in heaven and on earth. Now with that, that's the prophecy. What does that have to do with the elections? I'm glad you asked. God says, asks really. Do you trust me? This idea of these economies, this administration, this arrangement, dispensations, guess how many ways God has tried, or I should say, has God allowed humans to try to make things work? Turns out there are 7. Go ahead, Chris. This is my theoretical timeline. Remember, God is outside of time. So eternity past, that is to say, before Genesis 1:1, what was going on? Answer? I don't know. Probably fantasy football, but I can't be certain. Point of it is that the Bible just doesn't tell us. We don't know. And when it's all done, 7,000 years of human history that the Bible does detail much about, all we know is Revelation 21 and 22, and a new heaven and a new earth. after the great white throne judgment and hell and separation that was originally engineered, designed, and built for Satan and fallen demons. But humans will go there. Well, why? Because they won't trust what God says. So Revelation 21 and 22, what's after the new heaven and new earth and new Jerusalem? We just don't know, other than it's going to be really cool. Let's talk about the first dispensation. Here it is. The first dispensation, or the first economy, was God saying, let's try this. Let's make a perfect creation. Animals not eating other animals, a la Discovery Channel. No poisons and no carnivorous teeth, etc., etc. And all the animals ate straw like an ox did. And everything was perfect. Man was created innocent. He was set in a perfect environment. He and Eve had a deep, full relationship with God and each other. How awesome was that? And in every sort of economy or dispensation, God would give us some conditions. The condition of the very first dispensation was pretty simple. Of everything in the garden you may eat, except of the ho-ho tree. Don't eat that. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil. How many conditions is that? Surely humans can do that one. Can you trust me, Adam and Eve, not to eat? Sure, until that moment. Well, what was the response? They ate, and what was the result? The expulsion from the garden and all relationships between God and man and between Adam and Eve became damaged and diminished. Well, is God done? Nope. Let's go to our next slide. Let's try a different dispensation. And theologians call this one conscience. Another name is the Adamic or Adam covenant. Experiential knowledge of good and evil. Now we know about good and now we know about evil. Adam and Eve and following are now accountable to that. There is death now inside the creation. By the way, when was the first death? When God says, Adam, why are you hiding from me? And he said, because I'm naked and I was afraid of you. I was naked and afraid. And he started a television program after that. No, not really. He was naked and afraid and he sewed for himself a fig leaf, right? God says, what's with a fig leaf? Well, I was naked and I was afraid. And Adam, who told you you were naked and afraid? Did you eat of the fruit? And then what did Adam say? The woman that you gave me. And God had to cover Adam's nakedness. Did you hear the word cover? The Hebrew word for cover is atonement. Atonement. How did God cover the nakedness of Adam and Eve? With an animal's skin. And before the animal would give up their skin, what had to be shed? Blood. Innocent blood had to be shed for the covering of sin. Does that ring a bell? The condition, do what is right and flee what is wrong. What was the response of the people? Let me read Genesis 6, verse 5. Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of men was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. What's the result? God had to bring the flood. Let's go to the next economy. Let's give humans another shot at this. Okay, human government. Man is responsible for governing the creation for God. It's often called the Noahic, or after Noah, the Noahic covenant, Genesis 9. Now man is responsible to govern the creation for God, and that is to say, govern other people. And God institutes capital punishment. If one man sheds another's blood and kills him, by men his blood or death is required. One of the most important aspects of humans governing humans is that people should have the final... If you go so far as to murder what God loves, then you will be put to death. That is to say, capital punishment. The condition? Righteous leaders leading people to God. What was the response? Nimrod. So what does Nimrod do? He founds a city on the plains of Shinar, Babylon. And what does he build there, everybody? A tower. Why? I'm going to look into the constellations of the Maseroth that God displays the entire gospel marching across the ecliptic every month of the year. Can't have that. So what he does is he perverts it and it becomes the zodiac. That God says, stay away from that stuff. So there's the response, Nimrod. I'll read to you Genesis 11, verse 5. So the Lord came down to see this city, this Babylon, and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, indeed, these people are one. Meaning, they are united against me in coming under the first dictator on the planet, Nimrod. And they all have one language. That is what they begin to do. Now nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. So what does God do? He confounds the language. It was a judgment. When people pool their brains and resources, as a rule, the society will eventually merge and move into a flow that is directly against what God has said. So that's not working. Now we'll go to the next one. This is the next dispensation. Promise, also known as the Abraham or Abrahamic covenant there in Genesis 12. What are the conditions? Well, all the nations will be blessed by you, says God. And here's another thing he says to Abraham. I will bless those that bless you, not only you, Abraham, but your offspring, the Hebrews, the Jews. All the nations will be blessed by you, Abraham. More specifically, your seed, capital S, speaking of ultimately what would be the Messiah. And also he says, I will bless those that bless you, Israel, and I will curse those that curse you. Do you know that that promise is still in effect? This dispensation is still in effect. What do you mean? God's will, God's character is demonstrated by and through Israel. And the promised land, what is that? We've been learning about that on Wednesday night. What is the promised land? Israel. The promise of the promised land is inexorably connected to this promise. That's why the land of Israel is so important to the promises and prophecies of God. Is it any wonder why the rest of the world is still trying to divide Jerusalem and Israel even further? And that's one of the prophecies of the very end times, that in the very last days, all the nations of the world will be against Israel. This current presidential administration, in my opinion, has done more to offend Israel than any administration previous. And God is watching. You see, when they came into the land in the first time under Moses, God says in Deuteronomy 28, if you do the law, if you do what I say, then I'm going to supernaturally protect you. But if you fall into idolatry, then I'm going to bring in some people that are going to take you out of the land. Well, that's what happened. They were away for 70 years in Babylonian captivity, but then they came back. Idolatry was still a big problem and disobedience. And finally, when Jesus shows up on Palm Sunday and everybody's laying the palm branches down and their coats down and singing the Hallel, blessed is he, capital H, the Messiah, who comes in the name of the Lord, Jehovah. They're saying that he's the Messiah. It's his party. Every other time he had done a miracle, let's go tell everybody you're Messiah. He would say, not yet, not yet. It's not my time. He was waiting for the completion of Daniel chapter 9.
been listening to Pastor Steve Hadley of Harvest Family Fellowship in Reno. Services are Wednesday evenings at 6:30 and Sunday mornings at 10:30. Pastor Steve encourages you to follow Acts chapter 2, verse 42. Word, worship, prayer, and fellowship every day. If you'd like to hear today's message in its full, unedited form, or view the verse-by-verse teachings from Pastor Steve, visit harvestreno.org. That's www.harvestreno.org.
How marvelous, how wonderful is my Savior's love for me.
May the Lord bless you and keep you as we are washed by the water of the Word.